The following program contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion advised.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived! The Senators in America's
Fantastic Four!
Hulk, Spider-Man, Iron Man,
Spider-Woman!
Welcome back to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. This is your moderator, Diablo Frank, and I'll shortly be joined by my co-hosts and best friends, Mr. Fixit and Illegal Machine, or Matt. Beginning this week, we'll be looking at Marvel's Annihilation Event, which was a series of mini-series that came out in 2006, spearheaded by writer Keith Giffen and editor Andy Schmidt, that reorganized and enlivened the cosmic end of Marvel's universe and formed the basis for what became Guardians of the Galaxy, which will be featured in a major motion picture this summer. All told, there were something like 35, 36 different comics tied into this event, so we're not going to try to tackle that all at once, and we've also added some material that wasn't officially part of the event, so it's going to take us a little time to get through that. We'll parse those out over the next few months, you know, probably alternating weeks. This week we're going to start with the Warlock miniseries from 2004 by Greg Pak and Charlie Adlard. No relation to the Annihilation event, just a character that is associated with that lineup and would play into later events in the Annihilation book, but this is very much a standalone. Now, this was the first episode that we recorded, and we were learning how to do it as we went along. The sound quality is very inconsistent. I hope that you suffer through this episode with us. I do think that there's some good material in here, and trust me, we'll get better as we go along. So I appreciate your patience, and I hope you enjoy the show. Mac, how familiar are you with the Marvel Cosmic Universe?
About as familiar as I would like to be, which is not a lot.
What have you read? But prior to us starting on this Annihilation books, what did you read?
I'm going to say basically nothing. I mean, I know the gist of characters like the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, see, that's one of the things. You asked me about the Guardians of the Galaxy, whether or not we were going to read any of the classic stuff, without apparently realizing that those stories are set in the 30th century and have almost nothing to do with Marvel.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I guess I just assumed at some point they crossed over. I remember Drax showing up in regular shit, so I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me that was in the 30th century. But then when you mentioned it, I guess it was in the future, but also who cares? So, yeah, I just assumed that why would anybody make anything with those characters in it ever again? So it didn't really occur to me that there would be newer shit based on those terrible characters.
Yeah.
So when you busted out quote-unquote newer shit, and it turns out it was from 2005, I guess that makes a little more sense, but I'm going to say nothing. I don't know anything about any of these characters, and I don't care about
them.
See,
and that's one of the things I wanted to have happen, actually. I wanted to have somebody who's coming into this with fresh eyes, who hadn't read any of this stuff before. Fix, on the other hand, though. Now, I know you're familiar with the Marvel Cosmic Universe. You go back to the 70s stuff. Because you talked about, you had an uncle. I had an uncle, too. My uncle left me a bunch of old Strange Tales fairly late in the run, which meant Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. by Steranko, Doctor Strange, and Warlock, because Adam Warlock was drafted into that book fairly late in the game, and he spun off into his own series. I also had Starlin, Captain Marvel, Alan Milgram, and Pat Broderick stuff, so in the late 70s, early 80s. Where did you get started on the Marvel Cosmic stuff?
Starlin's Warlock, and I remember reading
When did you get into it?
It was the collected ones, the colored collected.
The Baxter series from the 80s?
Okay. Yeah, the one through, I think, 6 or 7.
6, yeah.
My uncle had them. I had read sporadically, but like I said, I was reading more adult stuff, heavy metal, epic, and I remember reading it, and I was like, wow, are they all like this? It was so surreal at one moment, and in a dark examination of a character who knows he's going to be evil one day, and he's trying to fight it, and he's doing everything he can, but he's going to get there. So I remember reading that, and I thought, well, I guess all books are this good, and then, of course, I was sorely mistaken. So I could see how if you read that first and you expected every book to, you know, it set the bar for you, and you expected every book to touch that bar, many didn't even get in the same field, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all agree Jim Starlin pretty much is the height of any of these characters' runs.
Yeah. Well, the newer stuff's pretty good.
Jim Starlin probably touched it. Well, I'd say, like, for me, the only real stuff I remember was, like, the Death of Captain Marvel I read.
Yeah.
I thought that was some of the craziest shit ever. The freaking character was in cancer, and of course, Starlin drew it. It looked amazing. But really, outside of that, Did I know anything else about Captain Marvel before that? I knew his costume was awesome. Outside of that, you know, he never really crossed in any of the books I ever read. I mean, I guess in a way all these characters were, which is why they don't mind making some random movie about them, because they know nobody really has any tie to these characters, right?
Well, I think it was easier to write some of the other Marvel stuff because the world was so small. When you get to the cosmic stuff, it's so huge.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for
and
sure.
It's so out there that you can't walk into the middle of a series and grasp it. You have to kind of have started and know who's Galactus, and then how does Galactus fit in this pantheon of gods? And then who are these smaller characters like Warlock, Thanos, Fire Lord, like all these smaller characters? And then you start falling down a tier system. And then you get to like Fantastic Four, which is so basic anyone can pick it up and read it. And every once in a while, these characters kind of touch their world and then go back to this huge cosmic universe.
I mean, like in the Marvel Universe, you've got like Mephisto, who was like, oh my god, it's Satan. Like he's, and then you, and once you get to the cosmic level, he's just like another random powerful guy. And you're like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah.
Like you kind of have to change your perception of what you're reading, which is weird because we're talking about comic books.
But I think that's what Starling brought into it with his run, is you had this mega church in space.
Right.
It was kind of weird to read that, because if you read any of the other Marvel books, it's, you know, mutants bad, humans are fighting, and you get up there and it's like the majority are kind of messed up, fucked up evil, and it's the minority who's trying to stop them from destroying the universe. And really deep, especially for me to read as a kid. I remember reading that and having to reread it because I knew I didn't grasp everything. I knew I didn't catch it all. So I had to reread it to push myself to understand where he was going with it. And I loved it. That's what got me into Dreadstar. Because after I read that, I kind of saw some of the Dreadstar stuff, the early stuff, though, in the epic that I read. But that was...
Well, you read the Metamorphosis Odyssey,
didn't you? Yeah. And I read that stuff. So when you introduced me to the Dreadstar comic, to Plan M was fantastic. After Plan M, it just kind of petered out. So that's why when I read this stuff, like Annihilation and stuff, I enjoy it a little bit more. It's more of an opera. I actually read some of the old Guardian stuff, and it was boring. Yeah. Goofy. I remember reading Quasar, and like Quasar was kind of like... They had potential, but they just...
I forgot Quasar existed until you just said the word
really?
Quasar.
By the way, another commercial artist, Greg Capullo, who's pretty much the hottest guy at this point.
Started
time,
on Quasar.
Was Quasar.
On Quasar, right? Yeah.
And that very effeminate, beautiful man kind of thing. It was strange for a guy that butch and that associated with dark, grimy stuff to be doing the pretty boy when he gets started
Why
in his career.
Why wasn't Quasar in any of this stuff that we've been reading?
He is.
He later
actually
on.
Pops in.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Spoilers.
No. Ouch. But see, this was kind of a reboot for the whole cosmic universe, too. Because, of course, after Infinity Gauntlet, which was good. Then you had, Infinity War, Infinity Crisis.
Crusade.
Dude, they had like 50 of them after that. Infinity something. And you could tell they were trying to build on what Starling created, that whole cosmic opera. But I don't think any books really touched it.
And one thing I want to kind of touch on, too, because you talked about the descending order of these cosmic beings, these things that are beyond even gods, really, where they're part of the continuum existence, you know?
Well, I thought the Living Tributes... Tribunal?
Living Tribunal.
Was what, the voice of God, right? In the Marvel Universe?
There's so many different God whole stand-ins, but they are so far beyond the kin that they might as well be gods. But it was interesting to me that you worked it backwards to the Fantastic Four, because you know that was like the first of the modern Marvel books. That's what started the Marvel Modern Revolution. We grew up in the 80s and 90s. The Fantastic Four doesn't mean a lot to us. We're not... none of the three of us are fans of Fantastic
Four. Nobody cares about Fantastic
Four. But
I'm actually reading it now, but...
Mm-hmm. In the 60s, that was what Starling was to us. They were consistently coming across these things that were really fantastic. The first ones, they were running across the monsters like the Mole Man, which was basically just a callback to the stuff that Atlas had been doing in the 50s, where they were just doing giant monsters, big-eyed monsters,
but
that kind of thing.
You're saying instead of coming across robbers and purse stealers like Spider-Man, they were doing crazy
right.
abstracts?
And because... That was just a continuation of what Marvel had been doing with the monster stuff. But as the series progressed and they got more involved in the space exploration part and going into alternate universes, the Fantastic Four were the guys who were on the outer edges of what you could do with comic books and serial storytelling. They're the ones who went cosmic. You talk about Adam Warlock. Adam Warlock was introduced in Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. The concept of this god made by science, a living messiah, that's very of the 60s. But for a comic book, especially as conservative as comics can be, that was far out in front of what anybody else was doing. Galactus, this being that comes to Earth and judges us and decides to turn his finger down, that's pretty damn nihilistic for a comic book in the 64, 65, whatever it was. Yeah. So the Fantastic Four were introducing all these incredible concepts, But it's almost like they hit a wall in the 70s, just like the space program did, where they went as far out as they could go, and then they couldn't get weird enough anymore. They couldn't go any further out, so they stalled. And then it took guys like Stalin to come in and take a character like Adam Warlock. Well, and honestly, even before that, Roy Thomas. Roy Thomas is the one who took Adam Warlock and sent him to this parallel Earth where he became a literal messiah, where he was at one point crucified, and he became a god to those people, and then his world was destroyed in a terrible judgment. You know, I think, wasn't it the Great Evolutionary that ended up destroying that planet?
That's a little outside of what
point being is it was huge. It was really big stuff. And then Stalin came in there and went even bigger, where you ended up with the Universal Church of Truth, where they're running around the entire universe having a Spanish Inquisition, essentially, in outer space. And, like, for me, Jim Starlin was a life-changing creator because he... You know, when they tell you that kids aren't impacted by media, it's bullshit, because I was raised by media. And so guys like Jim Starlin affected my religious beliefs, affected my views on government, and a lot of things. Comic books, to be able to reach you in that way, it's important to you. It's why here you got a bunch of guys who are middle age and we're doing a podcast, because we still have that love because of what was instilled in us at that time.
We got really deep there.
Yeah. I know, man.
And then Jim Starlin went off and he did Dreadstar, and he started doing darker stuff. And it was only going into the 90s, when people were threatening to bring Adam Warlock back, which he didn't want to have happen, that he came back to Marvel, started working on Silver Surfer, and sort of resurrected all this stuff that he had done in the 70s. Thanos and Warlock, and to some degree Captain Marvel, because that's when they started teasing him coming back. You had that cosmic universe that got started really with the Fantastic Four and the Silver Surfer, the introduction of Galactus. And then in the 70s, you had your Adam Warlock, you had Captain Marvel, who was, of course, a Kree soldier who came to our Earth. I believe when he posing as a superhero, and then he ended up turning against his own people and trying to defend the Earth instead of turning against us. And then eventually he became sort of a cosmic messiah as well. All that stuff went away after the 70s, and then in the 90s, it came back with the Infinity Gauntlet and its endless sequels. And Silver Surfer was a huge hit in the 90s, you know. That was like his golden period when he ran, what was it, 150, 200 issues that series ran? A lot of it under the fire of Ron Lim and foil covers
somehow,
and shit.
Somehow, yes. And foil, good old foil covers.
And they always tried to expand beyond that. It never really worked for them. And instead, it ended up contracting, and Marvel lost that cosmic universe again. And that's what these fellows were trying to do with Annihilation, is they got guys who used to work on, like, Legion books, for instance. Legion was another thing that has a very hardcore but small following that loved the Legion to death, but you can't ever get new people into it because it's so convoluted. And so my understanding is the intention with Annihilation was to give people an event, there'd be a jumping on point to understand their cosmic universe. When it came to the Guardians of the Galaxy, the Guardians were basically Marvel's Legion of Superheroes. They were in the 30th century, and it was, Charlie 27?
Some dude with a cap shield.
Martin X. That was Vance Astrovic.
Some dude with cap shield.
Yeah, some dude
with cap
shield.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. They were terrible. So what happened is they were introduced in the late 60s. They didn't really catch on. They appeared in some Avengers stories in the 70s. Yeah. And then in the early 90s, you had the Image 7, where you had the biggest six artists that Marvel had, plus Jim Valentino. And the book that, yeah, and what Jim Valentino was doing was Guardians of the Galaxy. And I don't know how popular that was in the larger scheme of things, but like me and my brother were really into it because they were bringing in all that stuff that we'd read from the 70s comic books. And so they had a really good run, actually. I think they ran almost like 50, 60 some odd issues in the early 90s, early to mid 90s.
They got trades.
Yeah, they didn't cancel it until the bust. The name had cachet. So basically what they did is, you're talking about wanting to read that old Guardian stuff. It's completely irrelevant, though. All they did was take the name and apply it to characters that were more associated with other creators.
Got it.
This run, I feel, was a lot better. I liked Star-Lord. And it's weird to watch them making a movie out of it, because I remember reading the stuff and reading the concepts of it, and I was like, well, they would never make a movie out of this. This is too big, and the God's head floating in the sky, that's kind of a base for everyone to hang out. It was really weird, and so when I see the movie, and I see parts of nowhere in the movie, it's like, wow, they're closing doing that, because it's really good.
I'm very much looking forward to that movie. That's the closest I've seen to Marvel trying to come after their own Avengers movie, as far as their best movie.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic. I hope it's as good as it looks.
I am Adam Warlock.
Very briefly, what I wanted to look at is the Warlock miniseries, which is completely unrelated to Annihilation. I'm kind of shoehorning it in there. But as you can see from the conversation we had about the cosmic properties, Warlock matters, and he comes in later on anyway. Now, they did a miniseries back in 2004, 2005. It is by Greg Pak and Charlie Adlard. And I'm a huge Warlock fan. I bought a lot of Warlock stuff that was really unfortunate and I did not enjoy it because I'd been indoctrinated by Jim Starlin. But this series I said no to because I read a preview of it where it was very dismissive of the original Starlight material. It was like the first 5 pages of the story or something. It had Charlie Adler at art at a time when I could not stand Charlie Adler. It took Walking Dead before I started to appreciate his work. And so I just said no to it, and I managed to pick it up as a set on the cheap. I'll read you a little summary they have in one of the issues. College design student Janice Chin thought she was getting a summer gig as a character designer on a feature film, but what she got was a whole lot bigger. In the jungles of Costa Perdida, a collection of utopian scientists known as the Enclave have brought to life a god and christened him Adam Warlock. He will be their purifying vengeance, both a weapon and redeemer, who will bring about their long-sought-after dreams of a perfect world. However, the Enclave's young designer recruit, Janie, has different plans in mind. Appalled by the horrifying carnage of Warlock's missions, she secrets him away into the jungle, hoping to find a way to override the Enclave's indoctrination. Only then does she discover that he's left of his own volition, and he's set out to lay his judgment upon the world. So a lot of the book is Janine's, was that the name, Janine? Anyway, the girl's trying to turn Warlock toward benevolence and away from the killing that he had been doing. I don't want to spoil the ending of the book, but it goes to different places than I expected to go. What did you think about it?
It's not Adam Warlock. You could have shoehorned any kind of godlike character in there, and it would have worked okay the same way.
Yeah, and I actually disagree with you, because if there's a tendency to think that, just like, you know, like Daredevil, everybody thinks that Daredevil started with Frank Miller, and he'd been going for 20 years with that before Frank Miller. And there were people who had obviously embraced that character and kept that character alive for all that time before Frank Miller came along and radically altered him in a way that became more appealing to a larger audience, but was a vastly different take on the character than he had been previously. And I know a lot of people that are still pretty sore about that. Well, you and I, well, all three of us, we came in for the Jim Starlin material, but this guy existed. He was created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. There was a whole series of stories with him by Roy Thomas and Gil Kane. There was a lot of material that existed before Starlin that Starlin built upon, but he didn't create this character. He definitely took it to his breast, but he didn't create him.
I think he took him to the next level, where this, to me, it says Warlock, but it didn't feel like a Warlock story. And you're right, maybe I'm judging against Starlin stuff, but the fact that you put Warlock on the title, you expecting some kind of cosmic feel to it or something, and I had no cosmic. I really could have put any energy-based character in there, and they pretty much would have fit all right. It was a nice concept. It was a cool idea. I liked it. It was enjoyable. It was a good, you know, good ending. It's just, it wasn't a Warlock book for me. Warlock should be running around with his soul gem on his head with Pip on one side and what's her name?
Gamora.
Gamora on his other side, and they should be literally staring down gods and pushing their way through the universe. And I get it. This was probably trying to maybe test the waters for a reboot, see if they could go take Warlock in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't continue to have read the book. I would have stopped. What did you think?
Well, I came into it, obviously, I was like, show me. I haven't read enough Marvel stuff to be very familiar with Greg Pak. I actively disliked Charlie Adler for quite a few years. What I found, for starters, is I was really surprised how nice the artwork was and how well it worked.
Great.
It was much better than I expected, and part of it is because the stuff that's a little rougher, I forgive Adler because he's such a good storyteller. He had a really nice design sense at times, and I understand that most of the covers, I believe, were by J.H. Williams III, and that style is reflected somewhat in the book, in part also because the coloring is quite nice in it. But what I liked is that, again, we've gotten so far away from the origins of the Adam Warlock character, and this book was all about taking him back to that core concept and addressing that, the Enclave, addressing the reasons why he was created in the first place, stuff that they got away from in a major way as the character progressed.
They did a nice little twist with that. I did like that.
This was a failed attempt to do what Annihilation was going to do, where they were going to try to build from this. Mm-hmm. It very much ends on a note where you could see them trying to continue it in an ongoing series, and of course that never happened. What I liked is by getting back to this original state of the character, while three-quarters of the series is kind of familiar stuff, because we've seen the whole God on Earth thing before.
Yeah.
You're a big fan of Mark Miller, and he loves playing around with that sort of stuff. Alan Moore with Miracle Man, you've seen a lot of that stuff done by some of the most extraordinary talents in the field. So it's somewhat familiar, but I think by the end of it, they took it into a somewhat different place, where it was almost a commentary on some of those other projects that came after Warlock, but before this reimagining of Warlock. And because they went into a different place, again, I don't want to spoil the ending for people that might want to read it, but it flips my expectations, because I think they're going to go one way with it, and it goes in a way where this can coexist with the material that I love. This doesn't contradict what I loved. It adds to it, and in fact, it builds on other material that people had added to the Warlock lore that hasn't been addressed in a long time. And so it's almost a reimagining of character, like the Warlock universe, less than the Warlock character himself. Because you still have the Warlock you love, plus you have this other material that still works within that, the context of that story. So because it didn't negate the stuff that I love, because it went in its own direction, and because it addressed those early origins that have been forgotten, I would recommend the book. I liked it quite a bit.
Well, was this during the Ultimate reboot?
This was after the Ultimates, but before this material that we're going to be covering, the Annihilation material.
So then it's more kind of they felt, hey, look, we rebooted the X-Men and every other Marvel character under the universe. So let's go ahead and let's touch base on some of the more lesser known characters and take them in a different direction. I would agree with you there. If this was like an Ultimate book, okay, it works perfect because that universe is already so different from the Marvel universe we've read since we were kids. I could see that working there.
But they hedged their bets, too, where it feels a little bit like it's a near-future dystopia. But you're talking about a year or two out from 9/11. And obviously that was reflected in this story with some of the stuff they were dealing with. So if they wanted to, they could backpedal that aspect and make it the mainstream Marvel Universe. It clearly existed in such a way that you can take it or leave it in continuity as you chose, which is another thing I liked about it. But I think that by the end of it, I would embrace that as part of Marvel continuity because it doesn't damage the stuff that I care about.
Okay. One thing I forgot to mention when I was talking to Mr. Fixit about the Warlock miniseries was how much it resembled Nexus by Mike Baron and Steve Rude. Also, you can pick up the miniseries for dirt cheap, probably about $1 an issue online, but it's also available complete on Marvel Unlimited, which is running a special this weekend. I believe it's going to continue on through the week, where you can get their digital comic service for $1 for the entire month if you put in the code SDCC14, but you have to give them a credit card number because they're going to charge you $1 for now, and if you don't cancel the service, they're going to start automatically charging you $10 a month. So personally, though, I recommend just go ahead and pay for a year. It is an awesome service. Totally worth it.
I concur, even though I have not for just using yours, it seems really, really awesome. And even for someone who isn't really a comic book person anymore outside of this podcast, even I was like, man, for what is it, $70 a year? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like cheaper than Netflix almost, right?
It is. It is cheaper than Netflix. So anyway, so that's great. Okay, so let's look at the letters. This week we had followers on our Twitter, a bunch of new guys. I'm really happy to see it. Ange, Anti-Life Equation, BCX Radio, FKA Jason, Fresh Team, Lauren Skinskiss Art, hope I pronounced that correctly, Pirate Mike, Silver Age Sensations, and Zomblicity. We also received favorites and retweets from David Golding Artist, Eel Perrin, Eternal Rage, Firestorm Fan, Gabe Fonseca, Hot Air Radio, Infinity Watcher, Keith G. Baker, Longbox Graveyard, Mark Westcott, Raising My Super Kids, Top 5 Road Crew, Siskoid, Stab Fisticuffs, and Superman Shaggy. Ange, I'm familiar with because he runs the Supergirl Comic Box Commentary blog. I've done crossovers with him before, and he's one of the guys that piled around with a lot on Twitter. He wrote that he loved this episode as much as the first, speaking of the Submariner episode number one, as opposed to the Zero episode that we did. I am a DC guy, so might not comment, but listening and learning. I've read comics a long time, including Marvel, but consider myself a novice. We'll chime in if there's something worth adding. And I also asked him what Marvel stuff he was interested in hearing us talk about. He said that he was an Iron Fist fan throughout the years, and that he also loved Marvel Team-Up and the Wolfman Pollard Fantastic Four. I'm not sure how high on the list any of those properties are, but we'll do our best.
Yeah, why not?
So CJ wrote, great history lesson on Pound Namor, fellas. He's the king of Atlantis, gets no respect, no play from Sue, and can't be trusted. And to illustrate the point, he pulled an interesting image off of Instagram. There's a parody of an old Archie cover that's gotten mocked in the recent years. Thought it was pretty funny and fitting based on the Episode 1 podcast. I'm going to have this up on the blog, so if you want to take a look at it, you can see that image, and also an image he tweeted of Superman visiting the dentist.
Now, yeah, I like that. That Superman cover was great.
That was cool. Count Druncula is of the blog Flowers and Fishnets, a Black Canary blog. He's another guy I pal around a lot with on Twitter and have done blog crossovers with through my Martian Manhunter and DC blogs. He wrote, Iron Man, Hulk, Captain America, when can we look forward to a Heroes Reborn episode?
Yeah, I remember that tweet. That was, I don't know if that was that backhanded?
I think you're just going for a non-committal response and trying to find a way of getting out of addressing the actual question.
No, I take any event to remind me of those comic books is very insulting.
Just by association, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was definitely, that comment was made to hurt and harm, not help.
David Golding, artist, wrote that he is currently listening on this podcast. Then he offered no further tweets, and he might have unfollowed us, so that might not have been a good way for us to go down.
You know what? That's fine.
Firestorm Fan, which is run by Shag Matthews. That's another one of those blogs that I've had crossovers with. And the Marvel Superheroes podcast is directly inspired by his and Rob Kelly's The Fire and Water podcast. So he wrote in, is this new Marvel Superheroes podcast available on iTunes? And when we said it wasn't, he said you can create an RSS feed that pushes the iTunes. That's what we do. I believe the Illegal Machine's been working on that. Hasn't been successful so far, but the effort's being gone in.
Go check. Go to our Blogspot page. Click on the RSS feed and see if you can do. See, none of us have iPhones, so this is very difficult for us to check and see if these things are working.
I checked on the girlfriend's iPad. It wasn't working. If it's not working and you want to leave a comment with technical details, we'll take advantage of that.
Hey, please help! Help! It's the internet. Please help.
Yomel Pinheiro. Pacteo, I hope to God I pronounced that right, and I seriously doubt I did, said that he was currently listening on this podcast. No further tweets. We'll see how that goes, or we'll note the deafening silence.
Hey, please don't unfollow us. Or if you're going to, tell us why. Thanks.
He is still following us, thank goodness. So.
Excellent. He's my favorite person.
Yeah. Martin Gray of Too Dangerous for a Girl, a cool blog. I haven't done any crossovers with him, but I do tweet around with him a fair amount. And he's a devoted listener to the Fire and Water podcast. He said of the first episodes, I enjoyed that. It'll take time to audibly recognize who's who, but I'll get there. When we gave him a little bit of a cheat sheet on whose voices sounds like what, he wrote, most helpful, thank you. Is it too late to go with real names? When I said that I'm afraid of being stalked by the public, he said that he was actually planning some international stalking, so we managed to shut that down quickly. He also liked, of the characters that we're pushing so far, that it's a nice varied lineup. He loves 70s Namor look, Imperious Pecs. And then he said of the episode, that was great. Did you actually explain the title, though? You began to, then the talk about the ancient cartoon seemed to divert the expiation away. I get it anyway, but did I miss it? Nice job, whatever. How about a Wasp show? This Marvel Superheroes podcast, it was just a way of saying that we're not going to devote ourselves to any one Marvel hero. We're going to try to take in the entire universe. And I liked that cartoon as a kid, and I didn't realize until later on that my co-hosts had pretty much never seen that show ever in their whole entire lives.
Nope.
Professor Riptide wrote, thanks for the retweet, and hey, many thanks. I shall listen as soon as I get home. I haven't heard how he liked it yet, so we'll wait and see on that one. Finally, this was somewhat unrelated to the podcast as far as the Twitterverse, but on my personal account, Longbox Graveyard posted a tweet featuring a 1970s-era image by, I believe, John Buscema that showed Namor, the Hulk, Silver Surfer, and Galactus. And it was a great image. I'm going to have it on the blog so you can take a look at it. And both myself and former Aquaman writer Sean McLaughlin tweeted about it. And I asked McLaughlin, you know, given the chance, would he rather write Aquaman again, as he'd done in the 90s on a damn solid series, or Namor? And he said, never wrote Namor. Aquaman was my childhood favorite. Namor, especially Everett's a favorite too. But given the chance, he would go with new ground. Don't look back. You never know what's gaining on you. So maybe hopefully one of these days he'll get to work on Namor. He had a meeting at Universal in a few months, and I had to break the news to him that Universal no longer had the rights to do anything with Namor.
Ouch. So let's go to some of the comments on our Blogspot page. The first is from Liz Birds. She says, the Energy Shield, this was going back to talking about the new Avengers. Is it Avengers Now? Is that what they're calling it?
Yes.
What are they calling it? With Falcon replacing Captain America. So she says, the Energy Shield for Sam as Cap would make sense because it would be practically weightless. Marvel Wiki says Cap Shield weighs 12 pounds. I agree that the ricocheting should be Steve's thing. I think we all agreed that, right? That
yeah.
Nobody else should be bouncing the shield off of walls. That's Cap's deal. As for Cap's Age of Ultron suit, I agree. It's better, but it's a tad busy. With the red and white stripes came out looking a bit odd. Part of me just wishes they could incorporate the traditional scale armor somehow. I totally agree. I don't know how it would work. But it seems that they could try a bit harder to make it work. James Spader as Ultron will be awesome. That was a brilliant casting decision. Benedict Cumberbatch is already in enough franchises That goes back to
the Doctor Strange matter, which I'm glad to hear. Right. If nothing else, that Joaquin Phoenix may have cock-blocked him.
Villains as heroes are kind of popular now, so a neighbor movie would be relevant if done right. The snobbish arrogance angle could be cool.
Agreed.
Which is totally agreed. P.S. She apologizes for being in so many words. In case you'll read them out loud next week, feel free to summarize. Nope, didn't summarize. I said, no need to apologize. It's only, like I said, 2.5 comments, so we'll read as long as you want to type.
Yeah, we're a little bitty baby blog, and for right now, we have the room to read them in full. If it ever reaches the point where we have to summarize, I'll be more active. I think we'll all be more active in replying directly to the blog so that we get to talk to you regardless. But for now, we've got the two room, and we want to nurture our fan base, so it's not an issue for us. We're happy to hear nice, long-winded comments because we're needy. We just need that support and those words. Please, yeah, give me. I'm soaking it up.
It just proves that she listened to the whole thing. So, I mean, no need to apologize. The next comment is from Count Dracula. Another great episode, guys, which is weird to say after episode one. I agree. He says, whatever. I'm a huge Namor fan, but I have always seen him more as a foil, either as a romantic rival or an outright villain, than a hero deserving of his own title. I kind of agree with that. And I love the green Speedo costume. We disagree. It takes a special brand of cockiness, and this is one word hyphenated, don't give a fuckness, much respect to that hyphenated word, to walk around in it. I can see that.
I like how he's able to work cockiness and tight green Speedo into one sentence.
I wasn't going to go there, but you did.
And I personally, I don't mind the green Speedo outfit. I do think the black suit is cool, too. This is a guy who needs to be resold to the public, and I don't think the green Speedo is going to do that, but I don't personally have any problems with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the green Speedo is probably normal to us because we've been looking at it for our entire comic book reading lives, but there's no way that green Speedo should be making it onto any sort of film, camera, television, anything.
I don't know. They've been having to work hard to make sure that the Marvel heroes get at least one topless scene per movie, so if you got a guy that came that way naturally, you could exploit it.
No. Do not want. Speedo, sort of scaly Speedo, it don't work.
I guess you don't want green scales around anybody's genitals. It just conjures up some poor imagery.
No, that sounds like an episode of House. If House was on HBO, that I would go, they've got some ailment. What's your ailment? I have green scales around my crotchular area.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my God, please, think of the children for the Halloween costumes. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you won that argument just now.
Oh my gosh.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, but remain copyright to the respective copyright holders. But of course, the views expressed are wholly owned by the people who spoke them. No infringement is intended.
And you get mad at me for what? There's your podcast.